Napa know-how.
It takes a lot to get excited about a bag, but most bags can't save you 20% on auto parts. That's 20% off headlamps, 20% off oil filters, 20% off virtually anything you can fit inside the 99-cent Napa reusable bag. So tell your buddies, there's a bag they just have to check out. Quality parts, helpful people. That's Napa know-how.
Napa know-how.
At participating Napa Auto Parts stores while supplies last. Minimum three items. Exclusions apply. Offer ends 10/31/17.
And now, insurance-minded speeches from GEICO.
It's a common expression, don't look a gift horse in the mouth. However, what if the horse's mouth is filled with useful insurance tools? This is the exact case with the GEICO app. Yes, the app is free and therefore a gift horse. However, look inside the app and behold, emergency roadside assistance, digital ID cards, bill pay. Get the GEICO app. Look it in the mouth. Get amazing services. Thank you.
You are Locked On Cavaliers, your daily podcast on the Cleveland Cavaliers, part of the Locked On Podcast Network. Your team every day.
Hello, everyone. Welcome back to the Locked On Cavaliers podcast, brought to you by the Locked On Podcast Network and FearTheSword.com. Haven't podded since Game 5 since the Cavs season ended in Oakland, but special pod today. I'm in Chicago, not in Cleveland. I'm here for my day job. Unfortunately, I'm here just to travel. If I could just travel and do podcasts with my Fear the Sword cohorts, that would be great. But joining me today is one of the members of the Fearless Sword Chicago Bureau. I think of it as a co-op more so than, you know, like a organized structure. It's Daniel Rowell. Daniel, what's going on, my man?
Hey, doing good. You know, we just got some barbecue. Having a good time.
Yeah. What's the name of that barbecue place? If you're in Chicago.
Green City Smoked Meats.
Like, I had just incredible. Really good meal. Really good primer for this. Had a really good sweet tea cocktail.
Yeah.
So I'm a fan. Like, I would.
Sliced brisket.
Yeah, some brisket. It was incredible. But you know, I haven't potted since the finals. You and I have talked about this a little bit, but we're a couple days removed now. It's been already some speculation about what the Cavs might do. There's the LeBron and my leaving stuff has popped up again a little bit, although it did pop up after Game 3. Kind of quiet on the Cavs front. We haven't heard anything about David Griffin, but let's start with the game first in that series. Did that turn out how you expected it to?
You know, after watching the first two games, I just felt so defeated and numb by the whole process. Like, it just seemed to me like the Cavs didn't have enough. So then when they closed out the last three games so strong, I don't know, almost became bittersweet. Like, I felt like I had, like, built up this this guard of, hey, this team is just way too good. This Warriors team just has the pieces that we can't beat. But then, you know, we were right there in Game 3. And Game 4, we blow them out. And, you know, I mean, everyone's talked about that. What if it's like if we just have one of those shots go down in Game 3 and we take it, then it's a 2-2 series. But, yeah, I don't know. For me, Game 5 was hard just because we were right there until the end, and then they just pulled away. You know, it's like it's something about the home crowd and just when you see the momentum shift within those last 5 minutes, it was gone.
Yeah, I think in Game 5, a lot that had went right for the Cavs seemed to break the other way. Like, so KD and Steph did not shoot as bad as they did in Cleveland, which mattered. I thought the Warriors' defense was a bit more adept at dealing with some of what Cleveland was doing. I thought LeBron and Kyrie both did look tired. You know, we don't ever really know for sure because you just never know about injuries, but Kyrie, like, did kind of look like he was limping in a couple points. The big one for me, the two big things for me were Tristan Thompson did not play as well as he did in Game 4. He wasn't necessarily as bad as he was early in the series, but I thought he wasn't quite as impactful. Zaza had those early offensive rebounds in particular.
Yeah.
And then Kevin Love picks up two fouls early in that game and never really found his rhythm.
Yeah.
That's it, like with how well he had played. That was a killer, I think, for the Cavs.
Did he have any points in the first half? It was like
I don't think so. Yeah. Like, I'm not going to – like, at this point, I'm not going to, like, bother the box score. But, like, he just didn't – like, the other games, you could feel Kevin Love's presence. Mm-hmm. Like, just in terms of watching the game and kind of going through the game. You didn't feel what Kevin Love was doing in game five.
Yeah. It just felt like they, like, you know, when I was watching the game, they get it down to about 8, and they just could never seem to break that barrier. Maybe did they get it down to 3 at some point? I can't remember.
It was down to 5 at different points, yeah. Like, in the second half, and Golden State really felt in control. Like, that was the thing for me. It's like, they felt like they were in control, but they never were able to fully move away and take over the game completely until...
Yeah.
Like, I mean, you kind of knew the last couple minutes that it was over, but it felt like the Cavs were still sort of in it, even if every time they had a run, Golden State pushed back on that run and kept the Cavs, like, it got to 5, they put it back to 10. If they got to 7, they put it back to 13. And against the Warriors, that's going to happen, and if you can't close that gap and get ahead and be able to take that 9-point swing that's coming, especially when they're in Oracle, especially when KD's hitting threes and Curry's hitting threes, and... everything else is, and like Iguodala had those two really big dunks in this game.
Yeah, like 20 points or something.
Right, he was awesome in game 5. Like, that, those are killers. And like, you know, against Golden State, like, the margin for error was already small. Stuff like that happens. It's an uphill battle.
Yeah,
which is a dumb cliche, but I mean, it's too, like, do you think about this at all in terms of if they win game 3, it's 2-2 going into game 5. Like, I mean, that would have made it certainly like a more even series, even if Golden State still favor the rest of the way. But I don't know if, like, that makes me think that, like, I think they're, we've had Lou and LeBron say, like, they think they're close. Like, there isn't, like, this huge gap. And they certainly, I think, competitively feel that way. I don't necessarily think there's, like, a huge, like, insurmountable gap. But it also was telling that a lot has to break right for you to, like, compete with Golden State. Like, it took that record-setting first quarter and first half in game 4 for you to be able to ultimately win that game by as many as you did, and like didn't close it out till 2 minutes, even though you led the whole way. Game 3, you know, even with Kyrie and Love having bad 3-point shooting nights, with Love 1-7, Kyrie 0-7 in that game, it still took LeBron James and Kyrie hitting so many other shots for you to kind of pull that out. Like, it so much has to break right for you to win, and that's just tough.
Yeah, I mean, you're not going to win the NBA Finals shooting 27% from 3 in the first few games, and then trying to win your home games. I don't know. I mean, I think if it were a 2-2 series and you lose game 5 like we did, you could still come back and win a game 7 and then game 6, and then, you know, LeBron in game 7 is a whole different thing. But I don't know. It just seemed to me that the Warriors capitalize on every mistake that you make.
Yes.
And they will make like the same amount of mistakes, but they just like they have so much talent. They just, like, you know, they can have 20 turnovers in a game and still win by 20. It's like, they're just always going to find a way.
They are always going to find a way. Like, that's just, I mean, KD was, like, the thing. It's like, that was, like, I know, like, everyone made the jokes, like, oh, he joined the 73-win team, and those are, like, I'm here for the jokes. But, like, he joins that team, and it just is, like, right. Like, he's the 7-foot unicorn who's like gonna shoot over LeBron and like come up big for them. Like, he was like, and he was really good on defense too. Like, he utilizes them on defense. Like, that's like just a very tough thing. Let's bring it up to this. One of the things that's been brought up postseason, and it's still early to think about this, it's it wouldn't shock me if the Cavs did something, and we'll get into like who's actually going to be making that decision. Like, that's like the first dot that to me actually kicks off the Cavs' offseason. But the thing that I think will shape the Cavs' offseason is people are going to wonder what they're going to do with the roster.
Yeah.
You probably would imagine there's some sort of bench rebuild, right? Like, I mean, just that we'll go through bench by bench, player by player there. But I think some people expect the Cavs to add a star. Like, the Paul George thing is already in full force, with Kevin Love probably being the guy people would trade. Like, that's the thing that people are going to most throw out there. I just don't know how likely something like that is going to be. Like, Love, if you're the Pacers and you're going to trade Paul George, you're going to go hunting for picks. You're not going to hunt for another guy who's in his prime, who's probably not a modern number one option in the way Paul George, you know, could be, or like maybe even a high 2 option.
Yeah.
You're not going to do that. You're going to go for the rebuild, I would guess, right? Boston's probably not trading for Love at this point when they can get, you know, they have other things going for them. Horford, Love in a modern NBA seems like the ideal front court necessarily. And they're probably, if they're going to do so, they're going to go after someone who can defend LeBron, right? Like, the Cavs would have just attacked Kevin Love. There's not, like, another lot of great options to deal Kevin Love to. Like, that's just kind of where you're at with him. I wouldn't necessarily trade him anyway, but there's also not another way for you to get, like, the if you want to go star for star, Paul George would be, like, the guy you'd want because he's available, or, like, just something like that. It just doesn't seem likely that they're getting somebody like that. I can't see, like, a realistic scenario where you get someone like that.
Yeah, I mean, the problem with Kevin Love is just his defense can't really keep up with some of the more nimble bigs in the NBA. And, like, you know, enemy number one is the Warriors, and he's usable against the boards.
Was really good in the finals. Like, he deserves so much credit for how well he played in the finals.
Yeah, but I don't know. I mean, to me, he's not a star in the way that Paul George is a star, where he can be, like, the best player on a team anymore. And, like, you know, if you do trade him to another team like that, I don't know if anyone's going to see him that way anymore. To me, he seems like an elite role player, where he's a really good 3-point shot. He's a great rebounder, and he can work in the post. But I mean, half of it is just, like, when you're working alongside LeBron and you can get switched on to, like, any player on the court just because of the double teams that they scheme up for players like Kyrie and LeBron. I don't know if it'll work on another team. I think the NBA is smart enough where I don't know if they're going to be, like, eager to trade him as much as just smell the desperation on the Cavs and looking to get a better deal than that.
And yeah, I just don't know if, like, the workable deals, like, if Boston calls you and offers you, like, Crowder and Bradley, like, I could see you considering it, I guess. That's just not likely, and I still just don't know if that's, like, with the money that's coming for those two guys and everything, that's tough. Yeah. Love is also just, like, I don't want to, like, throw him into these things because he's been really good. He's had his best, I thought he had his best year with the Cavs overall, and was good in the finals. Like, he had a playable, useful finals against Golden State, the matchup that was supposed to be just doom for him, right? Like, that was a really big step for Kevin Love.
What was so frustrating about this. It was, like, the Cavs played so well in this finals, and it wasn't enough. Yeah. And, like, I mean, it's hard to be critical of any of the players just because they all played at, like, a really great level. And mostly it's just, like, you know, you have to have these historic shooting nights and things like that.
Especially,
so I can't fault Kevin Love for it, but I also don't know if he's, like, the part of a roster that is going to win you a championship against this Warriors team.
Like, does he solve the problem, right? Like, yeah, does he solve the problem? And it's like, too, it's like, I think you're right. Like, Kyrie had a pretty overall very good final, especially the last couple of games. LeBron averaged a freaking triple-double and was, KD might have been the best player on the floor. LeBron, I think, you could argue, was, like, the most important and, you know, was over most consistent because KD had a couple games where he, you know, maybe missed some more threes, but LeBron was still kind of carrying everything. It just wasn't enough. Love was still really good. Tristan was, like, struggled. JR, you know, played really well the last couple games, but struggled the first two. Shumpert was awful, you know, except for, like, the defense in game one or game two.
Yeah.
RJ was bad early, was better at home, was not really useful in game five. Like, it's just, you go down that list, and it's the role guys that ended up struggling, and we're Golden State. Like, Iguodala's their fifth best player. That's insane. You know, if Klay Thompson's their fourth option, third option, like, that's, like, he was great on defense even when he struggled on offense. You know, they got useful minutes out of JaVale. Like, they got stuff out of Zaza. Like, the Cavs weren't going to get as much out of Shump, out of Deron Williams, out of those guys. Like, they're just not, they weren't getting that same level of production, which is, like, almost like a more, for me, like, the star thing is just sort of, like, either you're going to be able to do something like that or you're not. The actual, like, thing that I think that is the more realistic thing to do in terms of improving the bench just seems like it would be harder to do for me.
Mm-hmm.
Look at the age of the bench. Deron Williams is older. RJ probably could retire, was going to retire last year at this time when they won. A couple of days from now.
Channing Frye
is, like, older, was not playable against the Warriors.
Yeah.
You know, Dante Jones isn't a guy who's actually going to play minutes. I think most Cavs fans and just observers are just kind of over Amon Shumpert. Like, I think everyone just, like, he's not that good. He's good on defense, but he's kind of at best inconsistent on offense. JR, I'm good with JR. Like, you want JR. Korver just had a really bad finals, but, like, yeah, you know, he's a very one-way type of guy. Like, I just don't know how you, like, actually, like, improve some of this bench while keeping some of the guys you have, considering the cap, considering the age of the guys you already have.
Yeah, I mean, when I thought about it after the finals, the fundamental flaw I saw was that the Cavs' best player is LeBron James, and he has to guard Kevin Durant in all those scenarios. And Kevin Durant was cooking all series long.
And he's KD. Like, you're not going to, like, just like you're not going to stop LeBron. you're not going to, like, ever really stop KD. He's too good.
Mm-hmm. And so then all of a sudden, you have to find ways to, instead of, like, stopping KD, you have to stop Steph Curry, Klay Thompson. It's just, like, their second and third options are too good. And our second and third options are just as good offensively. I think Kyrie, actually, at moments, was perhaps, like, the second best offensive player in the series, you know, at least in Game 4. I mean, obviously, like, that isn't true because we lost 4-1 in the series. But for me, like, Kyrie and Love, while both talented offensively, just don't have that two-way ability that you see out of players like Klay Thompson that I think you need in the NBA right now. You need somebody that can be an elite guard perimeter, and also you can go to him as a third option or a second option as a playmaker to get it done. And right now, like, Kyrie does that offensively, so I think you get to keep him around. But then you need your third option to be somebody that can just be a lockdown defender. And, you know, on that list is, like, JR, who let KD just go through layups.
And he's, I mean, he's just too small. Shumpert. Like, he's just too small, you know. And Shump's, like, too small to actually defend KD. Yeah. Like, it was very telling to me that their best defensive lineups ended up being Kyrie, who, like, I think actually, like, when he's like, actually drawing a defense, mm-hmm. it's just so markedly different. You know, like, it's how much better he acts when he just doesn't die. Like, there's just the effort factor there. But he doesn't do it a lot. So, like, he deserves the label. I think he deserves a lot of the label he has on that end. Their best defensive lineups were, like, when they had LeBron able to guard Draymond. And they had either, he was at the four with RJ and Shump or JR, Korver, or Kyrie. Like, some combination of those guys, one through three or one through four. And LeBron's at the four or at the five, and you have either Love or Tristan, and if you have a big and you're not playing, like, the Cavs' two big lineups in the series were destroyed by the Warriors when they went small and when all these things happened. And, like, the Cavs' foundation is really, like, when their best five guys is the starting lineup they've used since they got JR. Like, that has been their best lineup.
Yeah.
The whole, I mean, like, maybe you could argue, like, LeBron at center would be the most devastating. Maybe you could argue Love at center is the most offensively devastating. But if you look at the lineup that has the best rebounding, that has the lineup I think Lou's probably most comfortable with, it's probably the starters, again, that they've used since they got JR, you know, like the 2014-15 season. And that's never really changed, and we haven't actually seen some other lineups. Like, I mean, I guess the bench lineup last year was, like, one example of something else that worked, mm-hmm. but there hasn't been a lot else that's worked how that lineup has worked.
Yeah.
It's in large sample sizes, at least.
Yeah, and I mean, the LeBron plus shooters thing was an interesting experiment, but you just can't do that when you have Kyle Korver getting, like, cooked by Steph Curry, Klay Thompson, KD. It just didn't work.
Yeah, they had him defend... Korver defended Klay more than I would have guessed he would have.
Yeah.
Which I also get, because they weren't going to, like, have Klay create off the dribble, so you're, like, kind of daring them to maybe do that, and you're cool with Klay Thompson, I think. Compared to Steph and to KD, you're cool with Klay Thompson shooting a lot. You look at the bench, though. Let's wrap up that, bring that part of this pod right here. RJ could retire. Darren Williams is a free agent. Fry has a probably movable contract. Shumpert, you know, is owed $10 million, I think, next year. And it's, you could maybe move him. Korver's a free agent. Basically, there's no one on the roster at the end that is, like, locked into the roster, I don't think. I think the starting five that we know is. Like, I think all those guys will be back next year. That's just my guess right now. You could argue that I think that none of the guys on the bench are 100% safe. That includes Kay Felder. I guess that wouldn't include Walter Tavares, because it just seemed like a waste to even sign him in the first place if you're just going to cut him this summer. Yeah. But if David Griffin walks and he was the one who signed him, I guess that hypothetically puts him at risk. Out of who's on the actual, like, out of the bench, like, who would you want to be back next year?
I mean, he was awful in the finals, but I think there is value to Darren Williams as a playmaker and as a point guard, to help get some of these minutes off Kyrie. I mean, I don't know if rest actually was an issue at all in this finals, but it has been in the past, especially with Kyrie's health. And I think a player like Darren Williams, while not exactly talented, in clutch situations, still has value just as somebody that can help get rest to some of these other players. RJ was good. I don't know if he's still going to have that edge going forward. So I guess it'd be tough to keep RJ. I don't know. I mean, for me, it's that core and maybe Shumpert, because he's defensively good, but, and I just don't see anybody that could really trade or have interest in Shumpert at this point. He almost seems like a negative asset. I don't know, like, the kind of thing that would cost you a first-round pick just to get him off your roster, which we don't really have.
Yeah, I mean, the Cavs aren't in the business of, like, trading a first-round pick. They don't have a young player to really attach to. Like, I don't think Kay Felder's value is particularly high. I don't think Tavares's value is particularly high. I guess, like, Ceddie Osman or Chetty Osman, like, would have value. But, like, do you want to give him up? Because I think he could be – he's a guy you'd want to at least try next year as, like, as a bench guy. Like, that's something I would want to try if I was the Cavs.
Yeah, I mean, I think at this point, like, that's – you kind of have to cash in on your assets and start just building around some of these things. I mean, you can get the, what you said, Vince Carter's of the world.
Yeah, I think Vince Carter's a free agent, which I'd be very down for. I would probably, like, even though I'm not, like, a hardcore, like, fan anymore, I might get a Vince Carter Cavs jersey, because that just seems like it would be something I'd, like, a random jersey I'd want to have.
Yeah.
It's not as random as some of the ones I saw people wearing at the finals. Mm. Like, I saw a Luke Jackson, I saw DeJuan Wagner.
That's wild.
Yeah, like, I don't know why people are wearing those jerseys.
Has he gotten his job?
No one has jobs, unfortunately. No Yuri Welsh, no Z jerseys, actually.
Really?
That's disappointing. Ugh. But a couple Mark Prices, which is cool. Mark Price actually was at game 4. They just needed to have him at every game. That's actually my conspiracy take.
Yeah, I mean, the other thing is, do you buy any of the stakes about Ty Lue? I mean, he's a championship coach.
I'm glad you brought this up. There are things, like, it's the same thing with him and David Griffin. Like, I actually have very, the actual, like, quality and, like, fine points of my takes here are different. I think Lue's a really good coach. Like, I don't think any, like, I know people were, like, freaking out about him in the finals, and you could argue he was slow to adjust to things. He's also a coach who very much, like, you have to understand, he's coming from a spot where he likes to ride what has worked. And I don't really know exactly what he, I just don't know, like, what people are claiming for Channing Frye. Like, that wasn't going to do anything. Like, he was just going to be torched. Like, that was just going to happen. I don't know exactly, like, what adjustment you expected to make. My sort of rule of thumb with this is if, like, if you're going to be, like, Ty Lue needs to adjust his rotation and, like, set stuff, you need to offer, like, actual concrete, like, responses to this, because it's just like, you can, it's easy to say, like, this doesn't work, but you need to, like, have an, I think you need the idea to, like, retort back to it. That's kind of where I stand on that.
Yeah.
I don't think I think you could argue he was slow to adjust and, like, needed to maybe go to, like, the LeBron at 5 lines a little bit more. That would sort of be my thing. Or you know, playing just with one big and never playing just abandon the 2 big lineups except for the opening minutes of the game. That would probably be what I would have done, but in hindsight, I don't know if that would have mattered. I also think you cannot understate how important his ability to relate to that roster is.
Yeah.
David Blatt, like in this whole crazy cycle of the last 3 years, these last 3 seasons, like, David Blatt was, like, not relating to LeBron, not relating to the roster. Lou and Phil Handy and the rest of that, the coaching staff can, like, connect with Kyrie. They connect with LeBron. Like, you need that. I don't think that can be understated. I think Lou's almost an underrated coach. I think, like, you know, if and when he coaches a team that is not at, like, he's not thrown to the deep end, like, I think it'll be very interesting to watch him coach a lesser collection of talent. You know, I think one of the, there's probably some that falls on him in terms of the non-LeBron lineups not working. Like, you're going to have a drop-off, but they shouldn't be so catastrophic where you lose the game because of those minutes. Partially game 3 is, like, an example of that. Corver should have hit the 3, but...
Yeah. The stat I read, my friend told me this, I just couldn't believe it. LeBron James in game 3 was +7 in, what, 46 minutes?
Yeah.
And the Cavs lost by 5 points, which means that's a 2-minute swing with LeBron on the bench and a 12-point swing.
It's insane. It's insane.
It's crazy.
There's something on... It says... To me, that says something about Kyrie. Mm-hmm. It says something about Love to a lesser extent. But it says something about Lou and, like, how he's setting up Kyrie in the situation, I think. Even, like, it's possible it could just be, like, you take LeBron off the floor, like, it energizes the team, and, like, you know, maybe Kyrie's bad habits come out. Like, but, like, Lou has some culpability there. I think he's a really good coach. Like, I don't know exactly where he would fall in my top 20, top 10 of coaches, but I think he's, like, he's won a title. He makes some really good adjustments. He's a very good game planner when he has time to do so.
Mm-hmm.
Like, he got the defense working after it sort of sucking, and he can relate to players. Like, that is, to me, like, something you cannot quantify with any data point. Like, he can relate to LeBron, to all those guys.
Yeah.
I'm a fan of that. Like, I think he's a good coach. I think you'd be crazy to, like, think he's... I think it's a bad take, objectively, if you think he's a bad coach.
I mean, so here's the problem with Ty Lue, is he looks like a deer in headlights every single time the camera cuts to him. And I don't think it's his fault. I just think his default face is like, oh my God, I'm going to get hit by a car. It's just the way his chin falls and stuff. And I think maybe they'll just, like, just the producers at ABC are pretty good at their game. And so they will just cue up some kind of take of him, like, you know, looking at a replay. And he always looks, like, lost in the headlights. And I always see those. Like, you know, it looks like you need to get one of those gopher hammers and just knock his head down. But, you know, in the end, for me, Ty Lue is very good at relating to the players, like you said. And I don't really know how much coaching LeBron James is receptive to at age 32. And so some of this stuff where people were critical of how he managed minutes in this season and things like that just didn't really ring true to me.
Well, and the same thing with LeBron's minutes, too. Like, people can have, like, yes, like, Lou, it's Lou's decision, but, like, LeBron has Mike Mancias there, like, that is training him, and, like, they are creating a plan for LeBron.
Yeah.
Like, Lou has some, like, pushback there, but I don't think it's necessarily, like, a fully up-to-him decision.
Yeah.
That's just sort of my read on that. Like, it's not a perfect read. I'm not saying, like, breaking, like, don't go aggregate like that. I'm saying that, or tell someone that I'm saying, like, LeBron's minutes were not up to Lou, but, like, LeBron has some say in that.
Mm-hmm.
Like, he does, and it's a comfort for him, and having Mike Mincius around that's, like, the guy stretching him every game is part of that.
I don't know this is the other thing. I don't know if I trust Ty Lue to have an answer to this Warriors team, which is a problem, but I honestly don't know what coach. It's just kind of like the unsolvable problem.
That's a really good point, because I don't know if he, I think, like, his ability to scheme and, like, call plays is underrated.
Yeah.
I think he has good ATOs. Like, he has good defensive schemes when he has time to game plan. The Cavs as a whole, because they're a veteran team, are going to be better when you give them time to focus on one team, and they actually give a damn about the game they're playing. Like, they didn't care the regular season. Mm-hmm. Like, that's part of the reason why some of their metrics there, like, look so bad, is I just think the effort level's so low. It's not saying they were, like, ever going to be good defensively because of their personnel, because it might not have been, but, like, some of that is effort-based. I just don't know if, like, I kind of think he did about as well as you could do.
Yeah.
You know, like,
I mean, I bought in. I mean, like, you know, it's you can't judge somebody by one play, but I did buy into, like, that end of game three, LeBron James corner three was a pretty bad drawn up play, and I think Korver was on the bench for that, which was a shame because, you know, I mean, LeBron had the point. Korver is one of the best 3-point shooters in history, in the league right now.
Yeah.
And to see him on the bench is weird, but, you know, I guess you can't live and die by a couple missed shots in the third quarter and fire a NBA champion head coach based on that.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, I know I struggle with Ty Lue only just because I don't think he has the schemes and stuff that are going to make this team better. But I don't know. And that's almost a flawed way to think about it, because I don't know if this team as a whole has the pieces to get there.
Yeah, I mean, I think the pieces thing is important, because, like, I always had an issue with his rotations, but I'm just like, well, he has this rotation that's all over the place, and there's injuries, and you have personnel changes, and, you know, what they did the first three rounds, like, it wasn't exactly what was going to work against the Warriors. You know, they did some of it later on once LeBron was able to move off of KD for longer stretches, but there's limits on what they're going to do. I almost think, like, the guy who has more to do with where the Cavs are at right now is David Griffin.
Yeah.
He is now a free agent. Like, as we record this, we're sure to probably get some news that he signed an extension, because that's just where I'm tempting fate right now. But I need to do one of those NPR style, like, this podcast was recorded at, and things right now. If you want
8:54 p.m. Central
Time. Yeah, if someone out there wants to, like, send me in one of those, like, and I'll play it at the front of the next pod, I would be totally down for that. But, he, like, built a team that, like, very much was, like, built to win now around LeBron.
Yeah.
Like, he said that at Sloan, you're trying to maximize LeBron right now.
Mm-hmm.
I've always thought that, like, maybe you could do what the Warriors have done with some of their younger guys and turn them into players. There also was just not, like, the reason the Warriors have some of the guys, like, the reason Andre Iguodala is their fifth best player instead of, like, their third or fourth best player is because, like, the cap situation for them just worked out so perfectly.
Yeah.
There's not, like, a way to replicate that. So, Like, I think Griff has done, like, a really great job. I think you could argue some of the periphery moves could have been better. I think maybe you needed another defender, and maybe, you know, maybe the Larry Sanders thing was, like, a kind of a waste of time. Like, you know, could have, like, was Tavares or, like, a young wing, like, a better fit there for someone? Like, would that have been something better to pursue over the summer in summer league and then into the season? Those are questions that maybe deserve asking. But I was thinking he built the team that won a title. He has basically done every maneuver possible to get them flexibility to add something.
Yeah.
There are certain times where I wonder, like, things could have been better. Like, I can't believe I'm going to say this, but, like, when Delly was negotiating a deal, not last summer, but the year before, he offered something that would have been well below market value. Like, maybe you should have just signed him because it would have been cap friendly. But everything else he's done to me is, like, it's been very good. And, like, I don't have a ability to complain with him. I think it would be a loss if he ends up walking, or the Cavs decide they don't want to pay him whatever he wants. And he's making under $2 million right now.
Yeah.
He wants more say in the front office. That's, like, what's been reported. Like, I think it'd be a mistake if he's gone. And I think, for me, that's the thing that started the Cavs' offseason. Is, like, the draft is next week. They don't have a pick, but, like, will they buy a pick like they did with Kate Felder?
Yeah.
Will they do something to get involved, right? You know, does Seti come over? Like, do you consider Chetty someone you want to play on your team next year? Or is it someone you want to trade? Like, these are decisions that have to be made relatively soon. And Griffin, I think for the Cavs, you have to feel comfortable with Griffin doing it as opposed to, like, someone else that they would hire. And if you do move on from Griffin, you're probably making a decision very fast. Like, I don't think you have a choice but to make a decision very fast. And I'm going to stop rambling here, but, like, when you have LeBron at this point in his career, with the way the importance of this offseason, if you're the Cavs, doing stuff on the fly seems like very much less than ideal.
I don't know. I feel bad for David Griffin. You know, if you are a free agent at this point, do you really want to sign up for another year under Dan Gilbert as your owner with LeBron James as the guy that says he's not your GM, but who then also goes into the locker room and says we need a playmaker every other game when they're, you know, throwing in half efforts in the regular season? It's a tough job.
Well, no, it is right? A tough job. And, like, there isn't a lot of flexibility.
Yeah.
I mean, like, he's basically gotten them to the point where, like, unless he deals Shumpert, like, I don't know, can get something for Fry, like, I don't know what you're actually getting back. Like, that's a really tough position. How do you get better is, like, kind of the question you're asking this summer. And, like, I think it just comes down to, I mean, do you, like, let's just say, like, you are Dan Gilbert and it's, like, your job here to, like, decide what you want to do with this franchise and who's your GM. I mean, are you comfortable with anyone else that isn't David Griffin at all in any possible scenario?
I don't know. I mean, this is an owner who hired Mike Brown, NBA champion Mike Brown. So, oh, God.
This is not a thing I've looked up. Like, I heard this from somewhere, and I've looked it up, and it's true. But Dan Gilbert has never re-signed one of his general managers.
Really?
Danny Ferry took a year off instead of signing a new deal when that went bad. Grant got fired. Whoever you want to look at as Cavs GM since Dan Gilbert brought the team, they've not re-signed with a new deal.
Yeah.
So Griffin would be the first. And that to me, like, is in the subtext of The Return of the King by Windhorst and McMenamin, one of the subtexts there for me was Griffin and Gilbert necessarily don't get along that well.
Yeah. And I mean, I definitely get that sense that Griffin is not the problem in that situation. I don't know. I don't really have many favorable things to say about Dan Gilbert, but besides the fact that he has fronted the bill for my NBA champion Cleveland Cavaliers, I'm very grateful for that. But I'm not very grateful for the Rocket Mortgage app ads that are on all the podcasts that remind me that, you know, you can get a subprime mortgage at the click of a button by just downloading it on your phone and not having to talk to a human. That's pretty messed up. But I don't know. I think it's tough. I think David Griffin did a really good job, but at this point we're in year three of the LeBron kind of comeback, and you've depleted almost all the assets, and you're kind of continually asking for this team to get better than a team that's just that is better. I'm gonna go on like a weird kind of rant here, story, just for a second. But I downloaded this game on my phone. I think it's a decent analogy for what I think this kind of situation is, or maybe it's just a crazy story. but I play this game called Really Bad Chess. So Really Bad Chess is a computer game in which you have a chessboard and you're facing its 1970s computer chess AI, but the pieces that you have on the board are not the typical pieces that you would get served in a chess game. So instead of getting, you know, a queen, two knights, two rooks, and, you know, 10 pawns, you get like 8 knights, 3 rooks, 2 queens, and 3 bishops or something like that, and maybe 1 pawn. And the other team, you know, the AI you face will also have some kind of random number. So usually when I play this game, I wind up just trading off pieces until eventually I realize I've done something really stupid and the other team has like 3 queens left and I have 1 king, 1 queen, and maybe like a knight. And for me, this is like the analogy of the Cavs, right? It's like you have LeBron James, you have Kyrie, and a bunch of role players that are good against a team that you really don't have any control over in the Warriors that are just unstoppable because they basically have drafted and signed free agents at a level that is just not, we're not able to mimic that right now because of the assets that we have.
And I don't think the Celtics will have like the chances to like do something like that, but like that'll take time. I also just think like when you get LeBron and you do what you did, I don't know if they saw the Warriors coming in the way that they did.
Yeah.
Like, maybe they thought they would be really good, but I don't know if they necessarily saw this Warriors team happening. You know, like, I don't know if people necessarily saw it. I don't know if the Cavs saw that. I think they... You get LeBron, and you get Love, and you have Kyrie, and I think you think you're in a really good spot. My thing with Griffin is, like, I wonder, you know, if you could have used one roster spot every year on a young guy to develop, and, like, maybe those guys are better than Jordan McRae, yeah. Right? Like, maybe it's, like, someone better than that. Maybe you don't get rid of all your picks, although like, you had to do some of them to clear cap room, so like I get that, but there also comes time like you need to get rid of every first round pick to do so. And like, you know, I think Kay Felder is like a really good athlete. I think I would like to see what they would do with him next year if they decide to not sign a backup point guard.
Yeah.
But maybe like there was a better type of player to draft in that spot. Like, I don't have a name, so like this is certainly, I'm breaking my own rule here by like critiquing without like an obvious fix. You know, and late second round picks are going to be a fluke anyway. Like, a lot of them don't see second contracts. But, like, was the 5'9 point guard, like, your best use of money there? Like, that's kind of, you know, like, I wonder that. And, you know, Chetty is your guy who is, like, your resemblance of a first round pick this year. You could buy another pick. I think the Cavs, in, you know, you have two-way contracts and expanded rosters coming this year. I think the Cavs would have been a team that really would have benefited from a two-way contract and maybe utilizing that D-League system more. But those are small things, and I also just think that like, you probably were always going to feel more comfortable, and I can understand this, like going with the older guy as opposed to like the younger guy like a McCaw, but maybe needed a blend of them. Like you can get your David West, you can get your Zaza, but you can take a chance on your JaVale, but you also like get your Patrick McCaw and you get your Ian Clark and you give them minutes and you make them into rotation guys. Deal with the lumps and just lean on the stars that you have.
Yeah. No, I mean, I think that's right. I think that's probably the one flaw that David had as a GM. But I just think that the pressures that were on him with, like, signing contracts to players like JR and Tristan and stuff like that didn't really buy him any flexible cap room to... Mm-hmm. To get some of those players.
And pretty much every player they've gotten has been, like, an offensive player.
Yeah.
Like, Korver and Darren Williams, if they're your additions, and you don't actually end up getting to keep Bogut, you're signing offensive. You're signing one-way players, realistically. And that's just, I don't know. Like, maybe P.J. I know they reportedly offered some for P.J. Tucker, and maybe, I don't know if he actually, like, helps you that much. So that just feels like kind of like a dumb nitpick. But let's wrap it up on one last thing here, Dan. Just give me one outlandish, insane conspiracy theory prediction for the 2017 Cavaliers offseason. I'll go first.
Okay.
I have three. Okay. Well, number one, David Griffin will not be the GM next year. That's my vibe.
Oof.
That's also influenced by Wendy saying the longer it takes.
Mm-hmm.
Number two, we will get at least one instance of where Chetty Osman is brought up as a trade asset. That is going to happen. Like, he will be, some team will ask for him. I'm surprised it didn't happen at the deadline, if we're being honest. And number three, this is not basketball related, I guess, necessarily. It is, but it's not. Black will be a major color on the jerseys next year. Because they will be getting new jerseys this summer. Do you like the new logo, by the way? I haven't talked about this to anybody. It doesn't matter.
Yeah.
But it's like a soccer crest, which I don't hate. It looks. I don't know how it's going to look on a jersey or on shorts. It looks good on like pullovers and on t-shirts.
I just don't really like that the Cavs graphic design team tries and designs logos that look like they belong on blogs. Like, I get it. Like this, the cursive C and stuff, is it has like a decent look to it, but it has like a decent look to it on like a website.
Yeah.
And it looks awful like as a giant cursive C on a jersey. The balance is weird. And the other thing I would say is that wine color they have, and then they have also a secondary red color that they use with some of these other jerseys, it just really bothers me. Like, a lot. I don't know. The colors don't really gel. And like, I think black and white are kind of cool looking colors, especially when you add in the yellow. But that secondary logo is weird. It's just strange. I like the move towards more of like a battle kind of like Knights of the Round.
I like the homage to the jersey color they wore when coming back. Yeah. Like, I like that. What's your favorite like Cavs color combo? Is it the blue orange from the 80s, 90s?
It sounds awful because like those jerseys are actually really ugly, but those are my favorite. I like the blue. Yeah.
See, I like the Price Doherty. Those are my favorite Cavs jerseys.
The blue and orange.
Yes, those are my favorite Cavs jerseys.
Yeah.
I don't like hate the 90s color scheme. The jersey itself and the logo is awful. It was like super 90s. It was everything wrong with 90s design. But yeah, let's get your...
Why don't they go orange, though? Like, I don't know. I just love that the Cleveland Browns have, like, this classic, like, brown and orange look that... I just wish more of our teams would embrace that. Like, if we could just pick one color scheme and all go with it, it would be good. But...
Yeah, I mean, maybe the Indians changed, like, rightfully changed their logo.
Block C's.
Yeah, the Guardians is my preferred. For the Guardian statues downtown, that's my preferred. Or the Spiders. I don't even like Spiders.
I like Emerald City a lot as one. It's kind of a nickname that we used to have. Oak City.
It's the Forest City.
Forest City. That's what
Forest City. You could do there's the Negro League team was the Buckeyes.
Yeah.
Which I know like
that'd be good too.
The Ohio State thing, but I like the homage to like that was also a professional team, and it's not.
And LeBron loves the Buckeyes, so
yeah. And you could keep the Block C. So you could just make the Block C logo like the Cleveland thing and just. The name doesn't matter that much. It's still like the Cleveland.
They should do like an Ohio State colorways like alt jersey. That would look so.
I'm telling you, like this is kind of
free
dumb.
Money, Dan Gilbert.
Well, if like the Browns just drafted one Ohio State guy every year in the seventh round, like they would get so much like pub. Even if like it's just like if it's the difference between random guy and whoever, like that's why I think part of the reason people were so mad they traded back was because they took a Michigan guy and it wasn't.
Peppers is good. I mean, I'm like a Michigan fan, but...
Dude, he's also, like, he and Kaiser have been, like, very in on the Cavs. They've been at games. Like, Peppers, like, had a jersey already. They're doing like the Hayden thing. I'm in on that. I also, like, love, like, how... one of my favorite things while you're covering Cavs games and just, like, kind of, like... I'm, like, a fan of the city. Like, it's more so, like, I'm a fan of, like, the Cavs anymore.
Yeah.
But, like, seeing how, like, excited, like, fans get about... Hayden being there, and like even MGK, and like Stipe Miocic, the UFC champion, and like the bronze draft picks, and Kluber, and Joe Thomas, and it's awesome. Like it's awesome how excited people get about that. It's one of my favorite things about living in Cleveland. It's just like how insane people are about their fandoms. Like it can go too far sometimes. Like the Wahoo stuff goes too far. The bronze like just nihilism is a little bit like a little bit insane. And how much like time Sports Radio in Cleveland spends on draft stuff is and bronze stuff is just dumb.
two radio stations that just talk at 24/7.
Yeah, the Cavs could have like won their A-Street finals and be like, but the Browns didn't take a quarterback this year. It's dumb, but like you get the civic pride. What's your crazy prediction?
My crazy prediction. I wish I had more time to think about this, but
I should have told you when you're eating barbecue because you could come up with anything when you're full and eat it and drinking like a very good cocktail.
My gut says, I don't know. I mean, I just feel like I'm stealing other people's takes, but my gut says that if the Cavs need to win. That they have to pick up a big, like, they need a wing. And for me, that means that, like, Melo is going to be on this team. And I know that sounds, like, messed up and, like, but, I mean, you have to...
JR like the photo of LeBron and Melo in Cleveland jerseys. And I guess if Melo's doing divorce, it's easier for him to move, so...
Right? And sure, Melo wants that money, and I don't know if we're going to be able to afford
that. You have to deal Lover, Kyrie, or Tristan, which...
Mm-hmm. But, like, to me, like, if you are looking for a wing who can be a playmaker and... is achievable with some of our trade assets. Like, to me, that's not Jimmy Butler, and that's not Paul George. As much as I love both those players, to me, that's Melo. Which, you know, he's part of the big three, stuff like that. The other thing is like, I would love to see Dwayne Wade come through.
Hasn't picked up his option.
Yeah.
But
I don't know.
Yeah, that'd be wild if you got that. I mean, I think, like, if you could get Butler or George, you'd do it in an instant, probably, just because, but, like, not likely. Melo would be more likely, but I just also think, like, the money and so complicated. It's going to be a very interesting offseason. I have no idea really what to expect, to be honest with you.
Would you straight up trade Kyrie Irving and Kevin Love for Chris Paul and DeAndre Jordan?
No.
Chris Paul and Blake Griffin?
No.
Chris Paul, DeAndre Jordan, and Blake Griffin?
I mean, if you're giving me three guys, but then I have no room to sign anybody. Like, you're having to deal Tristan in that scenario.
Yeah,
Tristan. So, like, do I want the Clippers big three plus LeBron? No.
Like, do I want three players that have never made it out of the Eastern
Conference? It's not even, like, their fault, but it's just, like, I don't want, like, Blake Griffin who's losing his athleticism.
Yeah.
Right. And he can't shoot threes.
Yeah.
I have no idea. The fake Kevin Love trade Twitter right now is, like, the I should join you in a Twitter sabbatical and just hide because, like, the takes are coming. But... Dan, it's been a pleasure. I'm glad it worked out that we were able to do this in Chicago. Yeah, Carter Rodriguez is unfortunately, we're going to have lunch with him, but not going to get to pod with him while in the shy. But, man, it's been a pleasure, and thanks for taking me to some barbecue, and
thanks
for your bullshit with me about the Cavs for 45 minutes.
That's great. Go Cavs.
Yeah, it'll be an interesting summer. Everyone will be back on Monday. I'm going to flying in late tomorrow, and I just have some of a personal day Friday that I don't want to do anything on Friday because... I just don't want to, but we'll be back on Monday. Do a mail back on Monday. If we get enough questions, then you can drop this to lockedoncavs@gmail.com or do lockedoncavs on Twitter. And we'll start player reviews next week, and maybe we'll get some David Griffin news by then. But we'll start player reviews next week. Going to cover everybody from the old guys to Kay Felder to Tavares to LeBron James to Kyrie and Kevin Love and Ty Lue. We'll cover everybody. Offseason's coming up. Draft pod next week, too, because... Trevor Magnano will be back. We'll talk about the draft. But it's going to be fun. Big offseason. Thanks to Dan for stopping by in Chicago. And we'll talk to you guys again after the weekend.
Ace is the place with the helpful hardware, folks.
It's Ace's biggest LED light bulb sale of the year. Right now, buy one, get one free on our best-selling LED light bulbs. Our 4-pack of LED bulbs is $9.99. And our 2-pack of LED floodlights is only $12.99. Buy one, get one free. There's no limit on how much you can save, so stock up now. Hurry in. Buy one, get one free on long-lasting 10-year LED bulbs now through Monday, only at your neighborhood Ace. See participating stores for details.